creativity, in my limited experience, is a tripartite phenomenon. There is the artist, keen to express himself and make an impression. But there also has to be a genre, a pre-existent form or type of object to which the prospective artist's first relation was that of consumer, the pleasure of his consumption extending itself into the ambition to be a producer. And attached to that genre and inextricable from it, its growth is the audience that finds in the contents of this form some cause for consolation, amusement, or enlightenment. In Pompeii, racy frescoes served the purpose. In 17th century Amsterdam, wall paintings became necessary furniture. In the 19th century, novels developed a wide public, and Mr. Sennett's description of the plight and progress of classical music affords an interesting parallel. He says, in the 19th century, problems in communication arose because of the moral expectations the bourgeoisie had of art. Art, it was held, could refine taste, could remove one from the sordid world of small-mindedness and material striving. The romantic musician struggled constantly against these restraints of good taste. Art then became for the hard-working bourgeoisie relief from life rather than, as in less specialized times, an explanation and intensification of it. To an extent, it is still true that the arts survive as an instrument and emblem of social improvement. One goes to the museum and concerts and reads books because other nice people do. You come to college, indeed, partly to get the knack of the arts, so you will move at ease among other people who have learned the same knack. Art functions as a kind of grease in the social wheels. Banks and corporations are now among the chief purchasers of contemporary paintings, which hang in their offices not only as a possibly sound investment for themselves, but as a kind of soothing visual muzak to lull the financial nervousness of their customers.